This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Borscht Club on ORFM, where we stir up vibrant stories, rich traditions, and the voices of the Ukrainian community. Grab a seat. It's time to dive into something truly special. Hello and welcome. Вітаю, як справи? Andy Warhol, Казимир Малевич, Maria Primachenko, Sonia Delaney. Do you know what connects these names? They are Ukrainians. Ukrainians whose names are known all over the world. Artists who changed global art, influenced entire artistic movements, and helped shape modern visual culture as we know it today. And today I want to tell you a little about Ukrainian contemporary art. And after this short journey, a little surprise awaits you. An interview with a Ukrainian artist who lives right here in New Zealand. Very soon you will also be able to see her works here in Dunedin. So, Ukrainian art is far more than paintings in galleries or fashionable exhibitions. It is a living reflection of a country that has spent generations fighting for identity, freedom, memory, and the right to exist in its own voice. For decades, many Ukrainian artists were hidden behind Soviet narratives, censored, erased, or simply presented to the world as Russian artists. Kazimir Malevich, one of the founders of abstract art and the creator of the famous Black Square, was born in Kyiv and came from a Ukrainian family, yet for decades he was mostly described internationally as a Russian avant-garde artist. The world-famous painter Ilya Repin was born in Ukrainian Chuhuyev, yet his Ukrainian background was often ignored within imperial Russian cultural narratives. Sonia Delaney, one of the key figures of European modernism and fashion design, was born in Odessa, but her Ukrainian origins were rarely mentioned internationally. Maria Primachenko created an extraordinary artistic world inspired by Ukrainian folklore and village traditions, yet Soviet cultural systems often reduced Ukrainian art to something merely regional or ethnographic rather than recognizing it as an independent artistic force. Her works became internationally admired for their unique visual language. Even Pablo Picasso reportedly said, "I bow down before the artistic miracle of this brilliant Ukrainian." And many Ukrainian artists paid a terrible price for expressing Ukrainian identity. During the Soviet period, writers, painters, theater directors, and intellectuals were censored, imprisoned, executed, or erased from public life. An entire generation known as the Executed Renaissance. Because of this history, modern Ukraine is not only rediscovering its artists, it is reclaiming its cultural memory. Today, Ukrainian contemporary artists work across painting, sculpture, photography, installation art, film, textiles, street arts, digital media, and mixed materials. Some create deeply personal works about memory, displacement, identity, or belonging. Others respond directly to war, occupation, propaganda, destruction, and survival. Since 2014, and especially after the full-scale Russian invasion in 2022, many Ukrainian artists began documenting reality almost in real time. Their works became testimony, resistance, memory, and sometimes survival itself. Burned materials, fragments of destroyed buildings, military artifacts, embroidery, folklore symbols, and documentary photography are often combined into new visual languages connecting the past with the present. But Ukrainian contemporary art is not only about war. It is also full of humor, mythology, experimentation, tenderness, spirituality, folklore, nature and beauty. Traditional Ukrainian culture continues to influence modern artists in powerful ways. Today, Ukrainian artists are increasingly recognized internationally for their originality and emotional depth. Artists such as Oksana Mas, known for monumental installations inspired by traditional pisanki, Zhanna Kadyrova, who works with materials from destroyed urban spaces, and Anatoly Krivolap, famous for his expressive landscapes and extraordinary use of color, continue expanding the global presence of Ukrainian contemporary art. And many people are surprised to learn that even Andy Warhol had roots connected to this part of Eastern Europe. His parents were Ukrainian immigrants from the Carpathian region, connected to both Ukrainian and broader Carpathian cultural heritage. For Ukrainians living abroad, art has also become a bridge between cultures. It allows artists to share Ukrainian stories with international audiences, preserve identity, and create dialogue through creativity rather than politics alone. To experience Ukrainian contemporary art is to encounter a culture that continues to create, despite of war, pressure, displacement, and loss. It is art shaped not only by resilience, but also by imagination, intelligence, humor, and an ongoing refusal to disappear. Today we are speaking with Victoria, a Ukrainian woman who came to New Zealand, became inspired by Maori art, and now creates her own artworks, presenting Ukraine through the language of art. Victoria is also a very active member of our Ukrainian community. Thank you so much, Victoria, for agreeing to this interview. Let's begin. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm a new Kiwi. I arrived in New Zealand 2014. Originally, I'm from Ukraine, from Kyiv. At the moment, I'm building my new career as an artist, still working at the city council, so it's my after-work job, something new to do, and as a volunteer for Ukraine as well.
And now tell us more about yourself as an artist. What kind of art do you create?
I started with Maori art course. It was very basic, just level 3 with Te Wananga Te Aotearoa at SIT in Rockhargel. And it was very interesting, exciting experience. I enjoyed it a lot. I learned a lot about the culture. And what I realized that painting was the easiest for me. It was the hardest part probably for everybody, or at least for the majority. And for me, it was the easiest. I didn't struggle at all, and I enjoyed it. So I tried, after I finished, I had a box of paints left with me. And I was just, oh, okay, what else I can do? And I just found the solid board from the palettes. And it was the time when Hikoi was in Auckland and other places. And I thought, oh, maybe I can try to paint the flag red and black and put the it. So this was my first independent piece, which I didn't create during the course, but it still was relevant to the Maori culture. And after it, I found several pieces of pendix. It's the material used in the office. It's like pressed artificial flax, or don't know what else to explain, but it's in the office to divide spaces for sound. And it was so exciting. It's inspired me to create my first Ukrainian piece just because of the shape and the size. And then I decided to put the keyboard on it. I put the alphabet on it and some Ukrainian cities. It's never been shown anywhere yet. It just needs some, just waiting for the special moment. The next one was, I wanted, they were two identical pieces, and I wanted it as a diptych. And I started to do some research about Ukrainian artists. I wanted something relevant to Ukraine, but in a little bit more contemporary way. So I decided I want poppies and sunflowers. And I was looking for the style, what I can produce, what kind of style it would be, because I never had like a proper education. I don't have a fundamental knowledge. And this is how I found about Sonia Delaney. I got excited about her style, the way she used colors and all her history, how she became famous in Paris and her artworks in Pompidou. And yeah, so I created this diptych these two pieces with poppies and sunflowers. Unfortunately, they still never had a chance to be shown anywhere together, both pieces, and on the same space. It's just never happened. Because of the size, they've always been representing by themselves, just one piece. But now I hope one day I will gain all my Ukrainian pieces together and would be able to have a show relevant to Ukraine. Ideally, I would like to have it in Dunedin. Potentially, I have request from Wellington at the moment, so possibly it would be Wellington instead. And absolutely accidentally, I found a new style for myself. I'm covering old canvases, old frames from secondhand with fleece or velvet or some kind of similar material. And I paint with acrylic on them. Last year was very intense for me because of my health. I needed 7 weeks of recovery at home, and I prepared everything for this time when I wouldn't be able to work from the office, but I was able to paint. It was actually the comment from my doctor. She said, "No, you're not allowed to work. You don't go to the office, but you can paint." And I did. So I painted as Frida Kahlo in the bed. I was painting standing in front of easel when I could. So it was already set up, everything, and I could spend time doing it. And it was fantastic. And after it, I participated. I was very lucky to have two of my pieces as a finalist at the Art Awards Murihiku last year. And I actually got one award as well, which is amazing for one of the pieces. And I'm proud of the second one as much. I love it. It's still here. It hasn't been sold. But the one with the award, it's been sold.
You mentioned that you use recycled materials, old frames and found objects in your work. Could you tell us a bit more about the approach and why it is important to you? Do you see yourself continuing to create art in the future?
I do. I paint every day pretty much, unless I'm very tired. So the whole my place converted into the workshop for my art at the moment. So I used to run an Airbnb business, for example, and one of my bedrooms was for guests, but I converted it into the studio. But now even my living room is a studio, part of the studio as well. So it's all entirely. So I do continue. As for the recycling, I use the secondhand frames, and this is already upcycling itself. So they are canvases on frames, but they are old. So I very, very rarely use new ones, only if I have some specific project when I need a special size and I couldn't find secondhand, then I use new ones. And the materials, I buy them from secondhand as well, from op shops. So pretty much everything apart from brushes, because they need to be soft, and paints, because you can use them only once. So this is it. And I use for the packaging, I usually use boxes, all sorts of cardboards. Like recently, the shop next to me, they were changing equipment, and they delivered, and they were surprised that I came, and I asked if I can collect all the cardboards they have. So I just reuse everything what I can find, literally.
Where can people see your work?
I participate group exhibitions. For example, the next show would be in Dunedin with Otago Art Society. So I'm the member of Otago Art Society. So it would be annual show soon in July. I think it will be July, June, July, something like this. One piece I pretty much often have at Teatamira. with the project from Queenstown Art Society. They have them in the laneway. So one is near the toilets at the moment, mine. And I don't mind to be there because it's the most popular area. And it's a nice, really nice piece. I love it. Just today, we had our exhibition finished in Invercargill, which was Southland Art Society. So I'm mostly with art societies right now, but preparing for the smaller groups exhibition, so it would be not just like annual or art society, but we have been accepted as a, what it's called, like a double show with my partner, Adrienne Martin. She's an artist, she's a photographer, so we have a show together. Another one I'm waiting from the curator from Auckland, and there is still opportunity in Darlington, as I mentioned. So for next year, apart from art societies, there will be some more narrowed shows, more curated.
Why did you start creating art in the first place?
Why? Okay, good question. Initially, as I mentioned, it was the course, but the course I wanted to do to practice my te reo, because I was learning te reo Māori, and I just wanted to use it, not continue learning language itself, but start using it. And it was a great idea. I really loved it because our teacher was speaking with us in te reo. We were doing all the karaki, and all the knowledge about culture was great. This was one of the reasons. But why I continued to do it, this is another question. I wanted to promote Ukrainian culture as well. I wanted to represent Ukraine here and around the world. So for me, it's really important to keep creating something relevant to Ukraine, but not the only one. So I do reference some Ukrainian artists or artists who had some connections with Ukraine, but not only them. Yeah, I have my own pieces as well.
And how long have you been doing it?
Honestly, I remember myself even at school doing some kind of art. I was always participating in something creative. When I just arrived, I was lucky enough to stay with the family of artists, Gail and James Edmonds in Kerikeri. And I was inspired by them being so creative. So I was trying different styles, different medium, like watercolor, for example. And I created some pieces and I asked Gail to frame one for me. I gave one for her as a gift and to return me something. She framed another one and I used it as a payment for accommodation once in Christchurch for some very kind people rescued me. And I remember that I was refusing to call myself an artist. I was creating something, but I still couldn't believe I'm an artist. And Gail actually persuaded me that I have to sign the pieces because otherwise she just refused to take them, because she's considering me as an artist and I should sign.
That's such an inspiring story. Now let's talk a little bit about your work within the Ukrainian community. Whenever you can, you join us at the Octagon in Dunedin, where we gather every Saturday at midday. And I also know that you have recently become a coordinator of a very important project in Invercargill. Could you tell us more about it?
Thank you for introducing me to this project, actually. So you probably know more about the project itself. But I got involved because I'm in Invercargill and there are more than 100 beds, the medical beds, being donated to Ukraine. So we need to make sure they would be delivered. And for this reason, we collected already 28, and there are much more to go, many more. We would collect them next week and the week after. We need to store them and prepare for being shipped to Ukraine soon. Yeah, that's what we're doing. Right now, we have one person who provided us with a storage warehouse. And because it's equipment hiring company I hire, I would be happy to be mentioned. So Richard, the owner, he was helping by himself and one of his employees. Yeah, so three of us, literally. And I would say it's not enough at the moment. Yeah, I'm hoping to find more people. Just yesterday, I met guys, firefighters. I mentioned that we need help. I hope they would join us. Yeah, maybe somebody else.
What kind of help is needed right now?
We need more people. We need people physically to assist.
Hospital beds, for example, are extremely heavy.
You know, they are on the wheels. So I was driving them from the storing area, but we actually need stronger people who actually can lift them up. Sometimes they needed to be lifted. So yeah, we need these kind of people. When the container arrives, it needs to be done everything very quickly, so there wouldn't need for people just to fill in the documents, sort equipment and everything, just organize stuff. So it's not only physical, but physical help needed ASAP next week and further.
How can people find you if they would like to volunteer or help with this project?
I always use Facebook Messenger. My name is Victoria Naboka. It's the easiest way to contact me. I always can respond there. This would be the easiest. Instagram, Nabokovic. My family name, Naboka, N-A-B-O-K-A, Vic, for Victoria, just first three letters. Social media, the best way.
And perhaps you could leave your email address as well, because not everyone uses social media.
That's okay. Nabokov, that's my family name again. Nabokov, at the end, at gmail.com.
The container is leaving from Invercargill, and the main focus is medical equipment. But if people would like to donate items, are they able to do that as well?
Yeah, we're open for any help and happy to accept any donation and store it for the container. Ideally new if it's clothing, or just contact me and we can negotiate and ask me any question. There are no restrictions for the questions. Just ask me what you think you would like to donate, and yeah, I can tell you if it would be possible. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Victoria. If you listen to Borscht Club, you already know that Ukrainians across New Zealand have sent 11 humanitarian containers to Ukraine. These containers included medical aid, equipment, medicines, merino thermal clothing, hospital beds, wheelchairs, and many other essential supplies. Thank you everybody who helped, who donated, for your kindness and support. You made this shipment possible. It is a powerful reminder of what can be achieved when people come together to help those in need. Can we send the 12th container? Together, absolutely we can. People and organizations from all across New Zealand continue to donate items for Ukrainians affected by the war. The next container will leave from Invercargill, so if you have the strength, time and willingness to help load the container, please get in touch. It is genuinely hard physical work, and any help makes a real difference. You can contact Victoria or me, Olya Vyazenko, through the social media or get in touch with Ukrainian Association of New Zealand Southern Regions. We would be incredibly grateful for your support. And if you would like to support the shipping costs financially, please search for the Give a Little page, Help Wounded Ukrainians to Live Their Lives. Or you can support the official account of Ukrainian Association of New Zealand Southern Regions. Every dollar matters. The Ukrainian community in New Zealand may not be large, but it is incredibly active, creative, and deeply connected. Across the country, Ukrainians organize cultural events, exhibitions, concerts, workshops, film screenings, language classes, podcasts, and community gatherings that help preserve Ukrainian culture while also sharing it with New Zealand audiences. Communities in Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, Nelson, Dunedin regularly come together not only to support Ukraine, but also to create spaces where people can experience Ukrainian music, art, traditions, food, language, and storytelling. Since the beginning of the full-scale invasion, many New Zealanders have also become part of these communities through volunteering, attending events, and supporting humanitarian and cultural initiatives. Here in Dunedin, Ukrainians and supporters gather every Saturday at midday at the Octagon in support of Ukraine. The community also organized cultural talks, art projects, fundraising events, film screenings, and public conversations about Ukrainian history and identity. For many Ukrainians living abroad, these projects are about much more than culture alone. They are a way to preserve identity, maintain connection with home, support one another, and ensure that Ukrainian voices continue to be heard even on the other side of the world. Thank you for being with us. Take care and see you next time. Thank you for tuning in to Borscht Club on ORFM. Stay connected with us and listen to our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and oar.org.nz. This is your host Оля Вязенко, wishing you joy and a delicious day ahead. До зустрічі! See you next time!
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.